This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You are on Saturday Magazine, Joy 94.9. Earlier, we had an extended chat with Harriet Shing, the new Victorian Minister for Equality, Water and Regional Development. Then Todd Fernando, the LGBTIQ Commissioner. Then a shorter chat with Karina Saxby. We're talking about postcodes and sexual health. Then Tony Walker, CEO of Ambulance Victoria, telling us about being diagnosed with bowel cancer and the treatment and his journey and how important it is to have those tests, which if you're a man of a certain age, they're sent to you. You get them in the mail.
I didn't know that. Can you tell me more about that?
Yeah, so basically...
What age do you need to be, Macca?
I think they actually start at 50, which is interesting considering that it's a lower age than that where some of the deaths occur. You can get the test at any time. You get sent this package.
And I look forward to this package.
It's basically a jiffy bag.
Yeah, right.
Not the jiffy bag, because basically you have to send something back.
Okay. Your stool.
Yeah. And, yeah, so it comes in a package and, you know, that's it's you know, you do it and you send it back. And
how convenient.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. And you get them in the post.
You know, they're going to do this with cervical screening.
Yes.
Soon for people who have cervixes.
Yeah.
So this is the new technology, actually, that is really incredible, which one of our listeners actually wrote in and said the medical technology
it's
is much better
so
now.
Much.
But I also think the screening technology is much better now. And I want to recognise the person who did write in, Tim, that said that his father died 3 decades ago from bowel cancer. And
I'm was glad, very different and, you know, sorry to hear that. And the thing is, you know, anyone that works in the health space knows that prevention is better than, you know, it's better to prevent a disease developing or a situation developing and then having to treat it.
Absolutely.
And for those who, you know, might take another tack, you know, the economic argument is very strong that with a health system, you know, that is under pressure to actually take, you know, take the situation of getting the treatment, getting the diagnosis, getting the treatment early is less expensive for the system. It's much better for your health.
Yep.
And I remember in the HIV/AIDS space many, many years ago, making a case to federal and state governments for more advertising. And, you know, the amount we were seeking was a couple of hundred grand, $200,000 for a year's worth of some outreach work but some advertising. And, you know, there was a bit of, I wouldn't say pushback, but a bit of, oh, you know. And I made the argument that at the time, for each person who became HIV positive, and bear in mind the treatment was very different then, there would be potentially a cost to the health system of $400,000. That would be the cost of treating that person over their lifetime. So I used to say, we spend half of that, half of one new infection, to potentially reduce the numbers of new infections. Isn't that money well spent? And it's the same with this, you know, that government, you know, health departments are sending this stuff out. You know, it's relatively low cost. It's not inconvenient, and you know that's what we need to do.
And the same goes for mental health. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Like, I mean,
which is my next.
A few weeks ago was about, you know, the release of the Deloitte report.
Yes.
Which was also about the economic benefit of preventing poor mental health earlier and doing intervention activities earlier. But it's really interesting because it's one of the the National Party government got in Brisbane, the Campbell Newman government, one of the first things they went around doing was axing prevention activities. And they axed a lot of prevention in the HIV space when they closed down the Queensland AIDS Council. And it can be seem like it's just a terrible thing to do regarding the health outcomes for people, like we heard from Tony before about actually if you get in early, you've got a far better chance of living and a far better chance of having a better quality of life. So there's actually a humanitarian argument, which is always the first and most important.
Of course.
But then there is that equal economic argument, if that needed to come into play, that it doesn't make good economics
and
to
it doesn't.
Just
and
treat people.
And, you know, the funding of
too late.
The AIDS Council was, I don't even think it was $2 million a year at the time. I think it was a couple of million. But at the end of the day, oh, that was one of the arguments, it's not value for money. Well, you know, at the end of the day, it is value for money because it is about education and it's about prevention. You know, I think sometimes, you know, governments make decisions and, you know, about issues that are quite important to some communities, and it's a relatively small amount of money.
Mm.
Right? The federal budget is tens, hundreds of billions of dollars.
Mm.
And you see discussions going on about $1 or $2 million in funding, right? Well, at a federal level, you know, they waste more than that on comm cars in a day, right? Like, seriously. So, you know, oh, you know, we're doing this, we're spending a lot of time talking about this, we're going to save $2 million. Seriously. Actually, be honest, it's actually about you don't support what's going on and you're going to stop it. It's not about money, right? Because if you actually did the sums, you'd see, well, what that money that when it's spent, what it creates, you know, the health outcomes it helps foster. You know, you'd rather have a bigger hit to the budget later. You know, sometimes I get really cranky about this.
Well, the victory around HIV funding, which is really important to remember, is the bipartisan support that was won.
Yes.
Because I think when these issues around preventative health become politicised and become about, oh, well, you're funding a minority group and we don't want to fund that minority group, it's really dangerous. And I'd say that's the politics we need to end. But around HIV, that politics was challenged and you did have that across the aisle support. And then I think it allowed an environment where people could fund prevention activities and have actually these conversations that are about evidence-based health promotion rather than political culture wars. And I hope with a change in government at the federal level that there will we can see that cultural change, because I actually think the same issues that affect HIV people, HIV, you know, is a parable argument about suicide prevention in our community, and we need to not politicize the prevention activities and they need not to be about, again, that idea of, oh, you want to fund a minority. No, actually, we want to save lives and do evidence-based responses. And the only way to really achieve that is to get those issues politically neutralized and have bipartisan support around evidence-based health. You know,
what an interesting concept.
Yeah. Well, here I am up on my high horse this topic.
And it's important, Joe. You know, it needs to be bipartisan, whether it is a quality policy, whether it's suicide prevention, whether it's men's health, whether it's counselling services in schools.
Mm.
Every single issue, if it's bipartisan, then the people, you know, who are sitting on the fence on an issue are more likely to go, well, actually, yeah, they're good arguments. I see that both sides of politics or all sides of politics are agreeing on that. Perhaps I should reconsider my view. And, you know, good outcomes like that drive good public health, good mental health, you know, good community health. And, you know, they also help drive equality. So a little segue, if I may, with Switchboard, I just wanted to touch, it's been a tough few years for Switchboard through COVID, through lockdowns. What is the biggest change you've seen in the nature, the subjects of the issues that are, you know, that people are then calling Switchboard about? Have you seen a big change? Is there something that's stood out more than another area?
I think yes and no, to be honest. I think there are still people, because we have, you know, I've seen the call logs back to 1991 when we, the call summaries of the call logs, and there are still people who call about the same issues.
Yeah.
And about coming out, about discrimination from their church, from their religious organization, their experiences of family violence. Those conversations, there can be identical conversations, which, you know, in itself is an interesting point. But one other thing is what we've seen as an organization is, and I welcome this, an increase in parents calling.
Right.
And that's been really welcome, and particularly parents of trans and gender diverse kids. And some of that has been driven by the direct attack on those kids, but also on the awareness of how important it can be to affirm a child's gender early, even if that's a social transition rather than any kind of medical intervention. And I think that we welcome those conversations with parents. Yeah. And I think that's been something that we've really seen during COVID. And but I think it's not so much about COVID, but about more
other
social, you know, the election campaign and just the general attacks we've seen on trans and gender diverse people since marriage equality. Absolutely, there's been people who have rung due to unemployment,
yep,
because of COVID, and that was definitely a feature. We also had people ring. One of the things I was really, it makes sense to me retrospectively, but I didn't expect it, was people, some long-term callers, and we welcome long-term callers for people to call back and call back as much as they need, particularly to the QLife service. As people know, we run two helplines, a QLife and Rainbow Door. And one of the things we saw was that there was people who were on, had been on Centrelink, and then they, for long term, and then they started receiving the increased rate of Centrelink.
Yep.
And there was a definite difference in some of those people talking about how far better they were supported during that time to get that small but significant increase in benefits. And how people could actually buy basic things
they could live.
Like food to help them through the week. And so, I mean, for me, one of the things I look at COVID, a couple of things is that we should have, let's look at how JobKeeper, JobSeeker, those unemployment benefits and employment benefits, how we could actually continue them, because I saw a real difference for people in our community.
What was happening, yeah.
And I'm a huge advocate out of that time for raising the rate.
Yeah,
and I'd like to see that back on the agenda, just because I personally saw through our callers how it increased mental health and for those people.
Right.
So I think it was interesting that some of the initiatives that would never have been tried because of COVID, access to childcare, raising the rate, how those things actually came into play and made real differences for real people who called us, showed us that you know, those changes could be different. So I think there was the detraction thing of people with poorer mental health and struggling, and we definitely saw that, and more people calling more than ever, and first time callers as well, people who said they'd never called a helpline, never reached out.
Wow.
And we definitely saw that.
Thanks for that insight.
Mm.
Look, I want to thank our guests today, which have been Harriet Shing, the new Victorian Minister for Equality, Water and Regional Development, Todd Fernando, LGBTIQ Commissioner, Karina Saxby from Monash Business School, Tony Walker from Ambulance Victoria, and also my co-host, Joe Ball. It's been great to share the show with you, Joe. I welcome you back. I know you're going to be back next month.
Yeah, I'm going to try and come once a month.
Yeah,
That's our plan, and I am so excited about this, because this is like something fun I'm doing for myself.
Yes, and, you know, it's look, I love doing the show, and you know, sometimes, you know, we have to have awkward discussions. It's great to share the microphone with you and another community voice, a powerful community voice and advocate. I appreciate it.
You're very welcome, and I have a lot of fun doing it as a long-term listener to Joy myself.
And just in case, you know, Joe, just like me, has opinions.
Yeah, I gave a few before, didn't I? I really gave a few before.
Those opinions are well-based and evidence-based. Thank you, Joe. You are on SatMag. Thanks for listening. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.